Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We begin with the most expensive congressional race in the nation's history in Georgia, where the polls closed an hour ago, and speak with Andra Gillespie, a professor of political science at Emory University, who served as a Martin Luther King visiting scholar in political science at MIT and was an analyst for Democratic pollster Mark Melman. She joins us to discuss this tight race between Democrat John Ossoff and Republican Karen Handel that has been flooded with outside money since it is widely seen as an early referendum on the troubled Trump administration. We'll look into whether Ossoff can squeak by with a narrow victory, this time with the help of the African-American vote, the absence of which some analysts say cost Ossoff an outright win in the primary, in which he fell just short of the 50% threshold. Then, following the shootdown of two Iranian drones and a Syrian fighter bomber by U.S.-led coalition forces in Syria, we will assess the warning from the Russians that any coalition aircraft venturing west of the Euphrates will be painted by Russian radar and treated as targets. An expert on Syria, Nicholas Harris, a Middle East researcher at the Center for a New American Security, joins us to discuss how Syria and Iran are trying to capture territory in the east of Syria, attempting to fill the vacuum as the Islamic State is defeated in the hope that they can create a land corridor from Assad-controlled territory across Iraq to Iran. Then finally, we will speak with Jonathan Marshall, an award-winning journalist and researcher who has a five-part series of articles on foreign lobbying at Consortium News, the latest of which is Saudis Win Hearts by Lining Pockets. We will discuss how other nations apart from Russia interfere in our elections by pouring money into hiring lobbyists and former officials while funding think tanks and political issues using the dark money channels opened up by the Supreme Court's Citizen United decision. And joining us now is Andra Gillespie, a professor of political science at Emory University. Before joining the faculty at Emory, she worked as an analyst for Democratic pollster Mark Melman. She's the author of The New Black Politician, Cory Booker, Newark, and Post-Racial America, and served as a Martin Luther King visiting scholar in the political science department at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Welcome to Background Briefing, Andra Gillespie.
Thank you.
So, Andra, the polls have closed an hour ago. Obviously, there's an expectation this could go well into the night. It seems that Mother Nature perhaps didn't help the Democrats. I understand it rained heavily in DeKalb County, the more Democratic part of the state, and it may have depressed turnout. What are the atmospherics?
It did rain today, and I've only been in DeKalb County today because that happens to be where I live and work. Right now, the race is neck and neck, so the only county that's reporting results right now is Fulton County, which is where Karen Handel is based, and right now she has a slight lead over John Ossoff. So right now, the race is actually hewing to what the polls told us we should expect to see. So we expect that this race is likely to be close, and it's way too close to call. I am familiar with the arguments and the empirical evidence about how rain can dampen turnout. And one of the things that we have to keep in mind is that there was record-breaking early voter turnout in this election. So through last Saturday, 142,000 people had already cast their ballots via early voting or mail-in. So the number of people who needed to actually come out to vote today was actually smaller than we would typically think about in previous elections because people have gotten used to the idea of casting their ballots early.
So could you make something from the fact that Fulton County, which is the stronghold of Karen Handel, the Republican who I believe is even more conservative than her district, is that the fact that she's not winning by a lot in her own safe area, does that say anything?
Not yet. I mean, it's too early to report. So it's only a partial report from districts, so we don't know for sure exactly what the breakdown of the vote is, and they're not breaking it down by precinct yet on the Secretary of State's website. It's only noting that Fulton County is partially reporting, so it's way too early to speculate.
So what about the contention that has been sort of floating around ever since the primary that took place a while back. And that's the last time we spoke, Andra. And as you recall, it was a very close nail biter, just like this one is, but for different reasons. Ossoff had to get to the 50% threshold to win outright and not have to go through this subsequent election that's on today. And he fell just fell short. So is there anything to the idea that the African-American vote didn't show up that time in the numbers that were necessary, and that cost him an outright win, and that this would be a critical factor in today's election?
Well, every vote counts in this district, which is why both candidates are looking to their bases and looking to critical swing groups. African-Americans as a whole make up about 13% of this district. And historically, their turnout in this district has not been proportional to their numbers in the population. So in that respect, the fact that African-Americans didn't comprise 13% of the electorate in the April election wasn't a surprise. Based on estimates from people who have access to voter rolls and then can match that to voter records, it looks like African-Americans are making up about 10% of the electorate this time around, which is, again, less than what their proportion is in the population. But that's not terribly unusual given historic voting patterns in the district. So I think, you know, while somebody could argue, given the narrow margin in this race, oh, if you just went to this group more or that group more, that might actually make the difference in the election. I think it's also important to keep in mind that you shouldn't put expectations on groups that don't necessarily hew to what prior voting behavior would suggest that it is. So the critical group in this election that I think a lot of people are going to be looking at are white women, particularly college-educated white women, some of whom do identify as being Republican, but maybe are dissatisfied with the Trump administration, or maybe could have been persuaded by John Ossoff's message related to women's health, particularly breast cancer, and Susan and Karen Handel's role in the Susan G. Komen Foundation decision to defund Planned Parenthood for a little while earlier this decade. You know, at the same time, I think largely when we look back at this race, what we're going to see is that partisanship is a big predictor of the vote. So in that respect, I expect Democrats to vote for Ossoff. I expect Republicans to vote for Karen Handel. And this comes down to GOTV. And we've got to give John Ossoff credit. He tried to find every Democrat that lived in this district. Based on polling from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, he actually was campaigned, personally contacted via canvassing or phone banking more than half of the voters in the district. So regardless of whether or not they win or lose, they are to be commended for actually personally reaching out to as many voters as they possibly could.
And again, I'm speaking with Andra Gillespie, a professor of political science at Emory University, who before joining the faculty at Emory worked as an analyst for Democratic pollster Mark Melman. She's the author of the new Black Politician, Cory Booker, Newark and the Post-Racial America, and served as a Martin Luther King visiting scholar in the political science department at Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Now, in terms of a television ad, there was this very scurrilous, little-known conservative group bought some time on the Fox News outlet there in Atlanta over the weekend with an ad showing emergency crews carrying victims of the attacks of the Republican congressmen practicing at the baseball game in Virginia the other day. And the moderator voiceover intoned, "The same unhinged leftist cheering last week's shooting are all backing John Ossoff. And if he wins, they win." I mean, that's pretty below the belt, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And both candidates condemned the ad. And even when a GOP party chair from an adjacent district praised the ad or predicted that shooting would actually help Karen Handel, he was roundly criticized and then had to apologize and take back those comments. They were really unfortunate. I think, you know, it is a reflection of the polarization and the lack of civility in our culture that the shooting and these incidents remind us that we all need to be mindful against. At the end of the day, the most people had made up their mind about who they were going to support before this ad hit the airwaves. So in that respect, I guess one can be thankful for the fact that there was early voting if you were a Karen Handel supporter, because many of her supporters likely would have already cast their votes. So if there was any uncertainty for Ossoff voters, you know, as a result of the incident, which I doubt that there was, chances are they've already made up their mind and they weren't going to be dissuaded from that because of that ad if they saw it.
So how much has been made of the fact that John Ossoff lives about a mile or so out of the district because his girlfriend is studying medicine at Emory University and he's supporting her, but he grew up in the district he's running in. So have the Republicans been able to make an issue out of that?
Karen Handel has certainly tried, so she constantly refers to him as an outsider. So she's using the combination of his living outside the district, using his policy views, which she argues are ideologically incongruent with voters in the district. And then she also uses his fundraising haul, and in particular that he got a lot of donations from California. So they talk about the Hollywood donations, but then they also talk about the donations from San Francisco, and they routinely try to tie John Ossoff to Nancy Pelosi and indicate that he's going to be a shill for her if he's elected to Congress. So it's constantly come up as a refrain. Ossoff voters do not seem to be swayed by the data. So there was a poll about a month ago that asked the question about Ossoff's residency status. They don't think that it's an issue. For Handel voters, though, a slim majority of respondents in the survey indicated that it was a major problem for them. And about nearly a quarter of Handel voters suggested that it was a minor problem for them. So I think that, you know, if we're Monday morning quarterbacking tomorrow and Ossoff loses, that's one of the things that people are going to speculate may have been the reason for his loss, especially if it's a narrow loss.
But what accounts for the fact that he was fairly comfortably ahead of her in the polls and now it's shrunk down to about 1 point of 1%? So $56 million is spent in this most expensive race in the history of U.S. Congress. So has the money on her side, as much as she's gone after Hollywood and San Francisco money, obviously a lot of money's poured in on her side, perhaps even more. Something has made a difference in narrowing the gap, has it not?
Well, I mean, so there are a number of factors to keep in mind. I mean, clearly Ossoff and his supporters have raised more money than Handel has. But there are a couple of things to think about. One, the April election was what we call a blanket primary. So it was just like the primaries that you have in California. It's an open primary where anybody can run, and whoever the top two vote getters were going to move to the second round. It could have been two Democrats. It could have been two Republicans. The Democrats very quickly consolidated around John Ossoff as a candidate. There was a state senator in particular named Ron Slotin, who some people thought because of his prior experience might have been a viable candidate. But once John Ossoff got some key endorsements from Congressman Hank Johnson and John Lewis, it became very clear that the Democrats were going to consolidate around this one candidate. And that coalescence actually allowed Ossoff to take the lead. Because of the numbers in the district and that this district is a Republican-leaning district, it was never really predicted that he was going to get 50% plus one on the first ballot. And so it wasn't surprising that this went to a runoff. On the Republican side, you had about a dozen Republicans who were running for office, and so the Republican vote was naturally going to split amongst them. And so once Handel was the Republican with the plurality of votes, then it was her job to consolidate that Republican vote. I think an important thing to keep in mind, especially not knowing yet what the final outcome of this election is going to be, if you take Ossoff's percentage, he gets a little over 48% of the vote, and then you add up the votes for all of the remaining Democratic candidates and the two independent candidates who were liberal-leaning in their points of view, that still was less than 50%. So Ossoff was going to have to do more to not just win over those voters who voted for other left-leaning candidates, but he was also going to have to find more voters and actually bring them to the polls.
Well, Andra Gillespie, I thank you for joining us. I guess you're going to be up there for a few more hours, right?
Yeah,
we're not going to know anything until quite late. Well, thank you for insight, and I appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.
And again, I've been speaking with Andra Gillespie, who is a professor of political science at Emory University. Before joining the faculty at Emory, she worked as an analyst for Democratic pollster Mark Melman and is the author of The New Black Politician, Cory Booker, Newark, and Post-Racial America. And she served as a Martin Luther King visiting scholar in the political science department at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back looking into whether an accidental war between the U.S. and Russia could break out in Syria.